following is a special presentation of Amateur Nation.
Uncle Tom is somebody who has sold out by embracing the white man, by becoming a Republican, by rejecting the idea that you're a victim, by supporting things like hard work, accountability, and low taxes, by refusing to think of yourself as a black person first, as opposed to an American who is black. That quote said by Larry Elder. Hello, I'm Lou Santini. Thank you for joining me for this special episode. This is episode 120, and for the first time, no three topics, no off-topic, no three pro things. Today, the entire episode is a pro thing. Today's episode is the first of its kind for Amateur Nation, as the entire episode is devoted to one guest interview. On episode 108, entitled Pro Lives Matter, in the Three Pro Things segment, I listed the documentary movie Uncle Tom, which was recommended to me by friends and fans of this show, Abby Sibikow, Tomas Strom, and Rachel Johnston. I've now watched it twice. It's one of those movies you watch and go, yeah, right? And yes, thank you, often, because most of the movie is nothing but common sense and facts. Produced by common sense guru, American talk radio host, author, attorney, and documentary filmmaker Larry Elder. It's one of those movies where you think, why isn't everyone watching this? Why isn't this shown in schools and on television? There's no hate, no screaming, no talking over anyone, no propaganda, no agenda, just stats, facts, evidence, and real-life stories from Black America, both famous and non-famous, young and old. Talking about race and racism, or the lack thereof, in America. Not to mention frequent sentiments of accountability, work ethic, values, and character. As I said in episode 108, it is must viewing for all races and ages. If you like common sense and facts, this is the documentary for you. If you want to stay in denial and just live your life with baseless emotion and scream that everything is racist because mainstream media tells you to, then avoid it. You can watch it on YouTube, iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, and of course, UncleTom.com. Here's a quick synopsis. In a collection of intimate interviews with some of America's most provocative black conservative thinkers, Uncle Tom takes a different look at being black in America. Featuring media personalities, ministers, civil rights activists, veterans, and a self-employed plumber, the film explores their personal journeys of navigating the world as one of America's most misunderstood political and cultural groups, the American Black Conservative. Uncle Tom examines self-empowerment, individualism, and rejecting the victim narrative. With me today is the self-employed plumber you see at the opening shots and interspersed throughout Uncle Tom, as well as the end, more or less bookending the movie. And since the release of Uncle Tom, Chad has sold his plumbing company and is helping produce Uncle Tom 2, the release date to be determined. So without further ado, please welcome the star and producer of the film Uncle Tom 2, Chad Jackson. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I cannot tell you how pleased I am and how grateful I am to have you on this show. So let's just get to it, if you don't mind. Now, within the first minute of Uncle Tom, you said, and I quote, "I like to look at things objectively," which is not typical of what we call on this show amateur behavior. Right out of the gate, you speak common sense, and that's what this show and my book, of course, is all about. And I've often said, Amateur Nation and the woke crowd operates by feelings rather than reasoning and thinking, with knee-jerk reactions to things merely on the surface, and thereby clinging to stereotypes and old, what I would call comfortable ways of thinking. My question is, do you find that in much of the world, rather your world, that is the case as well?
Well, that's a very good question, obviously. I think for me, whenever I became a Republican, or if you can call it that, I think I was just so done with, I guess, the political ideology that I came out of. I was just so ready for something new and fresh. And so I think there was kind of an overcorrection, in a sense, where, you know, I kind of blindly went along with things that I thought was Republican. But I think now that I'm older, I'm 31 years old now, I see now that there's even things, I guess, that quote-unquote Republicans believe that isn't really objective. And so I try to now just be pretty objective about the way I go about things. But yes, in the world I am now, the world I am in now, I definitely see, even on the quote-unquote conservative side of the political spectrum, just this ready and willingness to go along with things that's a narrative versus to look into things objectively.
Yeah, that's I agree with what you said there, because I don't agree with just voting one way just because, going along with a certain crowd that I've always gone with just because. I mean, I don't mean to oversimplify your answer, but it sounds like you're still digging deeper when it comes to answers, when it comes to your to sociology and political ideals.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I don't want to lead the question, so I'll leave it open here. Where and or how do you feel many people get to the point where they operate solely on emotions, feelings, and preconceived notions? What do you think it is?
I think the primary element is fear, and I think that the media has found a way to tap into that which makes people afraid, that which makes people uncomfortable. And that has done two things. On the one hand, for the casual observer, it has made them willing and ready to go along with whatever marching orders come on the other side of that. And for those who are suspicious, the way I look at it is, you know, the old story of the emperor with no clothes. The whole crowd was silent on the fact that the emperor had no clothes, even though they all knew it, but they were too afraid to say anything. It took a child to finally say, look, this emperor is butt naked. And so I think that the media has, in a sense, created this illusion of a popular opinion, and people, even though they may or may not believe it, they go along with it because they believe that their neighbor agrees with it as well. And so we need more of those, you know, children who are willing to step up and call it for what it is.
I've never, I mean, this could be why I'm still single at my age, but I've never gone along with the crowd, never mind just with relationships. I'm just talking about in general. I don't understand. I mean, look, we all, you know, when we're kids and teenagers, even college in our 20s, we want to fit in. Everyone wants to fit in. But then also there's that part of you that wants to rebel. I've never wanted to rebel just for the sake of rebelling any more than I've wanted to fit in just for the sake of fitting in. You know what I mean? So how is it that while, you know, woke amateurs out there that we talk about on this show are not objective, how is it that you, Chad Jackson, are able to be objective when so many woke amateurs are not?
Well, I think this kind of this useful idiot phenomenon that a lot of people buy into, and really what it is they're kind of tapping into a milieu of social standards. I call it the spirit of the age. I know that sounds very academic or intellectual, but basically all it is, oh, if I say this or if I do this, then that will put me on, that will get me some kind of notoriety. And so that's, I think, kind of what people are trying to tap into. Whereas me, I'm naturally skeptical. I'm naturally, I go against the grain. I don't like anything mainstream. And so this is true in what we call black culture. This is true just in a lot of the, I guess, what millennials are supposed to believe as well, where if something is being put out there artificially as something that we're supposed to go along with, I'm automatically like, okay, what's the agenda behind this? What's really going on? And then about 9.5 times out of 10, I find out that, oh, okay, well, it's definitely meant to mislead and to deceive and to manipulate people. So
you mentioned that you're a natural skeptic. I am too. And I think a lot of people think skepticism means negativity. And that's not the case. It's just a matter of I just don't want to take everything on its surface. I mean, look, there are certain things in life. You can't go through life questioning absolutely everything. You won't get anything done. But the bigger things, the bigger pictures, the things that affect your day-to-day life and your ideals and how you operate in society, I think should be questioned. And the way I've always operated is when it comes to being skeptical and questioning things, I'd rather be wrong about the side I'm taking, like, oh, okay, I was wrong. Great. At least now I know. Than just going along for the sake of going along and finding out the hard way. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That makes a ton of sense. I think that, you know, Hollywood, for all of its you know, ways in which it has, I think, ruined society, I think that there has been some positives that have come out of Hollywood, and that is what a movie does is it gives the viewer an inside look that, you know, those who are being mistreated in a film or whatever don't get to see. Like, they get to see the villain and the behind the scenes like view of the schemes and the plans of the villain. And I think that, like, if anything, Hollywood should teach people, moviegoers, that, like, look, things aren't always what they seem. There's always some kind of ulterior motive in politics. A politician, when they say certain things on a campaign trail, usually have some kind of ulterior motive, some kind of special interest that they're catering to, and they're just doing what needs to be done to get elected. And so the fact that people are so ready to believe a politician when they say something on the campaign trail, or believe a prominent journalist when they say something in media, I think is troubling, and I think that it's a sign of the fact that we are really dealing with an overall dumbed down society, and that we're kind of like sheep kind of headed for the slaughter without realizing it. I know that sounds very apocalyptic, but I think that it's kind of where we are.
Well, yeah, not to mention that it's not like it's not warranted when it comes to that type of thinking, considering the times we're living in right now. Politicians will tell us, hey, we have these problems, and people seem to forget, you caused the problem. They create the problem and then tell the people that they have a problem and they need the politicians to solve the very problem that they caused.
I mean, the Great Depression is the biggest example, in my opinion, of just that. But yeah, the government involvement in any quote unquote problem, always seems to worsen, issues more than they help. And I think people exactly what, like you just said, kind of turn a blind eye to the fact, well, it's your involvement in this particular issue that has caused us to be where we are in the first place. I mean, if not for the government, a lot of the businesses that close as a result of COVID would still be open. But we found out now that, oh, well, COVID is not as mortal or deadly as we were told it was going to be. Tell that to all the people whose businesses are closed, you know, from having to shut down their businesses.
Yeah, I always say, I mean, I like to err on the side of the positivity here, that by definition, I think most people do the right thing and have common sense. Not all, certainly not all. But I always use the example, if you've ever been in a four-way traffic stop where there's traffic lights in all four directions and maybe the power grid goes out due to a bad storm, and then people kind of have to, for lack of a better word, on the honor system, take turns going through that intersection. And you know what? I've never seen an accident when that happens. It's right. Because people are like, all right, well, no, you go ahead, go. Let's be a little careful here. The power's out. We don't have red lights, so let's be extra cautious. And then eventually the power comes back on, and then the red lights come on, and then the accidents happen. That's a unique phenomenon. And I think overall people can be counted on to do the right thing. It's the few that screw it up for everybody else.
I think that what you just explained is true more in Western civilizations than it is not so Western civilizations. Mm-hmm. Just this kind of common decency, this love for liberty and love for freedom, because we want to be treated a certain way, we do our best to make sure we're treating our neighbors a certain way. But again, I think the more this kind of division, this conflict theory, that's coming in from the hard left into our culture in a very pervasive way, is kind of putting people on edge. It's politicizing everything. We're at the point now where even sports are politicized.
Hell, math is politicized now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think, like, we're kind of losing a grasp on the days where there is this kind of common decency, like you just explained. It's still here now, but God knows whether it will be here, I think, a decade from now, if we continue down the path that we're on.
You just mentioned about dividing the country, and that's a perfect lead-in for my next question. You mentioned in Uncle Tom that it seems like people put you, Chad Jackson, in one of two categories. One, that you're an Uncle Tom because you hate black people, or two, you're trying to fit in with white people. Now, do you see that as a lose-lose situation? What is your take on that?
Well, it's definitely a tactic of the left. They understand that because I went out on my own and started a business and started a family and basically took control of my own life, that's a threat to their agenda. Their agenda is to collectivize for their own agenda, whatever you want to call it, whether it's ultimately socialism, communism. You know, we can get into the weeds of that, but they have an agenda, and step one of their agenda is to collectivize. Someone like myself, who is an individual, who thinks as an individual, who really marches to the beat of my own drum, I'm a threat to their agenda. And so the best thing to do to deal with folks like myself is to sabotage us by disparaging us as Uncle Toms or whatever, you know, the word is for that particular person or ethnic group or what have you. And it's a tried and true tactic. It's been going on since the turn of the 20th century to try to disparage the black community at large from listening to folks like Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver, who really was promoting this idea of, you know, stop crying and actually get to work and buy land and start businesses and take responsibility of your own economic situation. The NAACP and other organizations, they didn't like that, and so it was fitting to disparage those pastors and Booker T. Washington and others as Uncle Toms. And so, yeah, what I explain in the film is that's the category that they try to stick us in to make us look like sellouts or what have you, because the more they can make us look like the enemies, the more they come off as friendly. And, hey, we need to stick together. We're in this together. Let's be a collective to fight against this this proverbial racist society.
Well, exactly right. And not to mention, it creates, for a lack of a better word, job security. Because if everyone lived with the ideology that you lead your life, they would not be around. There would be no need for them. And they would render themselves obsolete.
Yeah, they'll be useless. And I think Thomas Sowell, he said it best when he said, as blacks begin to assimilate with the larger American society, so-called black leaders become irrelevant because they kind of market and grief and anger. They use those to their advantage. And so long as they can keep people angry, so long as they can keep people or give people something to be grieving about, they get to maintain their position in the black community. And so the black community in America really is kind of a thorn in the side as a result of their leadership.
If I could draw a parallel here, I draw a lot of parallels on this show. I would equate it to a doctor. You go in there and, hey, my thumb hurts. And then he fixes your thumb. And then you think you're all better. And he goes, hey, I might want to take a look at some of those strange moles you got. Then you get those moles handled. And you come in, and he's like, you know, I notice you're a little bit slow getting up. Like the doctor is going out of his way to find things wrong with you, so you keep coming back. Or the mechanic. You go in for a routine oil change and a tune-up. And he's like, you know, I'm just saying, while I was under the hood there, I noticed that you need some new, you know what I mean? And it's like, man, I really need this mechanic. He cares about me. It's like, no, your car was running fine, and you have common sense. When it's broke, you will come in, but, you know, you don't always need them.
Absolutely. No, that was, you said it perfectly.
Now, not that you need to live your life to please anybody, but I find it funny that the people calling you Uncle Tom are the very people that accuse you, me, and anyone and everyone else as being racist. Does the irony land on you? Do you even notice it?
Yeah, it's definitely a projection. And that's definitely a tool of, again, once again, the left. They, in order to divert the attention away from their own agenda and their own tactics, they accuse their political opponents their cultural opponents of doing the very thing that they're doing. And so it is definitely ironic. I mean, you saw, for example, the Antifa and Black Lives Matter organizations took over Seattle, or at least a couple of blocks of Seattle.
Yeah, and Portland and Minnesota. Yeah, Baltimore, pick one.
Absolutely, absolutely. So they literally took over these police stations and implanted themselves, and as a result, the police departments backed down and they went their separate ways. That is literally an insurrection. Literally. Mm. I mean, and then January 6th rolls around and we saw what happened there. And that's what we're calling an insurrection, and everything else by comparison is just the peaceful protest or whatever you want to call it. And so they kind of mark it in projection. And I think, I don't know if people go along with it. I just don't think that people pay enough attention or care.
You don't have to answer this question if you want to, if it's too personal. And maybe we've kind of touched on this, but when it comes to being accused of being racist or being called an Uncle Tom, either one, how do you personally deal with that? How can you ignore it? I'm not asking you, do you ignore it? I'm asking, how is that possible? That's an attack on your character. And I've always said, you can call me any name in the book all you want, but once you start questioning my loyalty and my character, we're going to have a problem.
For me, it's fairly easy. Like, I think if I do have an audience, or to the extent that I have an audience, I think that people are smart enough to see very clearly who has the upper hand in any kind of disagreement. And as soon as it resorts to name calling or challenging an individual's character, I think that that's a sign that you've lost that argument, that you've lost that discussion or that exchange.
Well said.
And so for me, I try to keep it focused on the facts. And, I kind of just smile or kind of laugh it away when it resorts to the name calling, simply because it shows, I don't know, for me, it's kind of an individual victory, in my opinion. So I kind of just like am warmed by that fact with a smile, if that makes sense.
Now, something I talk about in my book and on my podcast all the time, in this new woke culture, and I use the word culture with quotes around it, it seems that everyone, and I use this word exactly right, needs to celebrate their differences, not tolerate, not accept, but everyone in the woke culture somehow needs to celebrate their differences, but yet, ironically, expect to be treated the exact same. Now, to me, that's a losing battle. There's never any mention in the woke culture of character and work ethic, just race, sexual orientation, or sexual preference. Your thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, I think that actually kind of ties into your previous question in a way, because for me, like, I guess I'm a little bit motivated by, Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged, Fountainhead, to where, like, when it comes to my loyalty, I'm really loyal to myself and loyal to my family. When it boils down to it, I don't owe anything to the so-called Black community. You know what I mean? I'm not out here trying to the extent that I do talk about Black America, it's to show how Black America has been deceived. Mm-hmm. By the political left, by this, communistic ideology. But beyond that, I don't owe anything to the Black community. And so, like, I'm really loyal to myself, and that really is kind of a selfish attitude. But, hey, I wish everybody would just kind of stay in their lane, focus on themselves and improvement and so on. And I think the world would be, America in particular, would be a better place if people did just that. I think that this goal to try to collectivize everybody and to impose one's own convictions on the whole society is an issue. It's a problem. And it's turning people against each other unnecessarily. So I'm sorry, I forgot the question.
No, you answered it right. I mean, as soon as you said stay in your lane, the Chad Jackson stock just rose again. As soon as you said stay in your lane, you really struck a nerve. I mean, that's right up my alley.
Yeah, that's really what it boils down to is, each person should have freedom to, kind of be led by their own convictions, like you said, so long as you're not harming anyone else. And I know that's kind of a libertarian approach. I don't really categorize it. I just really believe, like, the noblest person of all is the individual who sets out to, make their own way and accomplishes that.
Oh, no, I agree with you, because I don't even would call it a libertarian approach. I just call it a common sense approach. I talk about it in my book ad nauseum and on this show about, you know, living your life through common sense. And as I said in the preamble to the interview, when I saw Uncle Tom, I've seen it twice. When I saw it the first time, I can't tell you how many times I watched it by myself and I was yelling out like, yes, thank you. And yeah, right. I mean, it just, to me, common sense circumvents the need for any other discussion. I mean, it's just common sense. The movie itself, there's no hate, there's no screaming. It's just facts and stats and evidence and real life stories from Black America, from both famous and non-famous. This should be shown on television. This should be in mainstream movie theaters if they were open. This is something that is educational. It's one of those movies that ended, I'm like, all right, this ended too early.
And I think that's a problem for the powers that be, because really kind of the net result, if somebody were to take our message in the film to heart, is to really take ownership of one's own life in spite of what race you are, where you are socioeconomically or what have you. And so it doesn't really deliver, in my opinion, even though I mentioned that I became a Republican, it doesn't deliver Black America into the hands of Republicans or into the hands of the libertarians or in the hands of whatever political faction. It really kind of gives you permission to take responsibility of your own life.
It delivers you in the hands of yourself.
Of yourself, exactly. And so that's why it's a threat, and I think that's why it was ignored by the mainstream media. But even though it was ignored, it still got a lot of grassroots traffic. And so I think the second film is going to be a problem for them, and it's going to go into some of the things that people now perceive as, oh, that's associated with Black culture. We're going to tell you who's behind a lot of these ideas.
We'll be right back with the second half of my time with Chad Jackson from the critically acclaimed documentary Uncle Tom, right after this. There's been an odd shift in human behavior over the last 15 plus years. A sense of entitlement. A constant need for attention.
Ironically coupled with the need to be left alone.
A desire to be treated the same as everyone else. Stupidly combined with the mindset of, I'm special, so treat me accordingly.
Introducing the book, Amateur Nation. The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills. The second edition.
Inside, you'll read,
The Amateur Mission Statement.
The 30 Truths About Amateurs. The 4 Stages of Being an Amateur. Amateur habitats and history. Social media plus me, me, me equals amateur.
Technology and amateur behavior.
With dozens of real funny photos, weird signs, and laugh out loud real life accounts and actual conversations vividly showing how us pros are surrounded by amateur nation every day. Download the expanded second edition of the ebook Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills.
The second expanded edition, available now.
Be a pro. Go to Amazon. Type Amateur Nation. In the very first movie, Larry Elder mentions that, quote, being an Uncle Tom means you have rejected the idea that you're a victim. And I talk about victim mentality, I would say, almost weekly on this show and in my book. Why do you think people want to embrace victimhood? Forget about race. Why do they want to embrace victimhood? I'm not asking you to be an armchair psychologist here, but whether they're Black or white or any color, why would anyone want to be a victim? And how did you not fall into that trap?
That's really a question. I think the reason why a lot of people fall for the victim tactic is because what it does is it takes the responsibility off of you, and it says that your misfortunes are the fault of someone else. So you see this term systemic racism really floating around, and what systemic racism says is, oh, it's because of the system that Blacks are killing each other at a higher rate than other ethnic groups. It's because of the system that Black youth don't value education. It's because of the system that, you know, there's a lot of teen pregnancies among Blacks. It's because of the system that whatever, fill in the blank, whatever disparity, Black people are not responsible for their own actions. And I think what that does is that makes the Black community, at least as it exists in the inner cities, a lot worse, especially when you add the element of defunding the police to the equation. It doesn't help things. It makes it a lot worse because you're taking that responsibility off of Blacks and putting it on something else that has nothing to do with what's going on with black folks. The way that I was able to escape it is because, you know, I've never lived in the inner city, but I've seen kind of the lifestyle of people who believe a certain collective mindset. But basically, I've seen the way in which people who subscribe to victim mentality live. And of course, I want better. I want better for myself. I want to be able to experience the best that life has to offer. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to know what it's like to be wealthy and all these things. And so I think for me, like, I'm always looking for a better way. And I don't think collectivism does that. I think that individualism does that better than collectivism. So as a result, if I do fail, my strategy is to try to find a different and better way. And so that means taking responsibility and not being a victim. I know that's kind of a loaded answer, but it's really just about learning from the best, regardless of what the race of the best is, and being able to admit, be a big boy and be able to admit, well, there's things that this culture does, it's better than that culture. The fact that this culture that's doing it better is quote unquote white, I mean, hey, it is what it is. But it's, the thing is, like, I don't think it's a bad thing to acknowledge good things about one nation that are better than a nation that's not doing so hot at this particular thing. The fact that we ascribe words like racist to facts, I think is asinine.
Asinine. That describes it perfectly. You know, when I asked you, how did you not fall into that trap? What's sad about me simply asking that question? It makes it seem like, well, all black people should or will eventually fall into the trap, yet you rose against the odds, whereas I believe, personally, that the majority, and by that I may say even if you say 51% of people, regardless of race, age, background, upbringing, financial status, etc., don't want to be victims. What mature and or intelligent person would want that? And frankly, I believe that number is much higher than 51%, but it seems like most people, regardless of race, find victim culture to be the easy route. It's not that they're complacent. It's like they're going out of their way. It seems like it's work to embrace victimhood because, as you said, you can blame other people for your troubles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that you have to ask a question, it's more to do with just kind of the way things are, sadly. I mean, what other ethnic group has something equivalent to the NAACP? Or Black Lives Matter.
Right. That's a good question.
These other organizations. Like, what's the white similarity to Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, the three women who started Black Lives Matter? What are the Hispanic, which I know that they're out there, but to the same degree that they're treated by the media, who's doing it the same way the blacks are?
And not to mention how they're treating their own people.
Absolutely. And so the fact is, where I'm going with this is that the black community is specifically targeted in a concerted way. And so, yes, it is necessary to ask questions like, how were you able to you know, not allow yourself to be captivated by this ideology? Because the truth is, because black people are specifically targeted through education, through entertainment, through journalism. I mean, you see right now, they're really trying to push the vaccines in the black community through various urban outreach tactics. And so it is kind of like jumping through obstacles to not allow oneself to be manipulated or carried away by those tactics. And so, yeah, that's a very important question to ask.
Is the word exploitive too strong of a word, do you think?
Well, no, it's a very fitting word. Yeah, I mean, blacks are, well, you even see with black entertainment kind of this exploitation. And it's all, you know, with black celebrities trying to clamor to get notoriety. And so they're willing to say or do anything to get that notoriety. And it just so happens that the things that they're saying and doing keeps blacks in this kind of victimhood mentality. And so they kind of add to it, whether you're talking about Oprah or LeBron James or Gayle King or any of the others, to the extent that they go on about their day artistically, it's all in an attempt to keep blacks angry, to keep them as victims, and not realize how good they have it here in the United States. And we really do have it so great here in the United States. Regardless of whatever past sins it may not have, when you look at how blacks are living in the United States compared to how they're living in Africa, it's very clear who has it better. And I don't know, I just think it's very strange how even blacks who do become successful here in the United States and attain for themselves a certain degree of wealth, they still, not all of them, but many of them still kind of tout this victimhood narrative because they believe that it will help keep them in their positioning. And it's kind of like a masochist type situation with the black community at large.
Wow.
Because they pay these people and give their money to these people who are telling them that you'll never be anything because of racism. It's a very strange phenomenon.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up. I actually wasn't planning on asking this question, but you kind of touched on it here. So going by what you said just now and talking about keeping black people angry and or in fear, your take on the entire LeBron James, your next tweet, and also how he handled that. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I think that LeBron James's need to it kind of reminds me of something else he said, where I think it was something to the extent where, you know, if you're a black man, you can't even walk down the street without your life being threatened or something like that. When you look at that particular example where the individual was shot after trying to stab someone, that individual was involved in criminal activity in the act of trying to stab somebody. Michael Brown was involved in criminal activity in, you know, trying to wrestle the gun from the police officer. George Floyd was involved in criminal activity and trying to spend counterfeit money and then resist arrest. And so all these individuals who were killed by the police, the common denominator is the fact that they were all in the middle of, you know, criminal activity. And so to say that a black man can't walk down the street without their life being in danger is to try to lump black men into the same category as criminals. So you're essentially saying that all black men are criminals. If I'm a black man, I'm walking down the street, that's not criminal behavior, right? However, if I were to rob a store and the police were to show up, then my life is in danger, especially if I try to resist arrest. If I comply, it's a different story. But the common denominator isn't the fact that these people were black, it's that they were involved in criminal activity. And so this narrative that LeBron James and the others are pushing, I think that they know what they're doing, many of them. I don't think that LeBron James knows what he's doing. I think he just literally believes the stuff that he says. And he's very militant and angry, which is strange for someone who makes millions of dollars. But that's, you know, here we are.
No, I agree. I mean, LeBron James is, if he's not a billionaire, he's damn close. And I'm talking to you here from Uniontown, Ohio, which is 15 minutes from where LeBron James started his basketball career. And has another home out here, kind of nearby. Granted, he came from poverty, but the idea of him being oppressed any more than Colin Kaepernick or these other ones that have been insulated, surrounded by hangers-on and people who are protecting their health, their wealth, their finances, their physical well-being, making sure they have the best diet, exercise, trainers, accommodations, car, you name it. And for them to speak on behalf of people who are indeed struggling, I just find it icky. It's tacky. It makes me uncomfortable. It's morally wrong. From what point are you coming from? So not only are you saying that you're oppressed, that you're fanning the flames of hate and violence and causing fear in the minds of young, impressionable black men and women, or any race for that matter, young people who will just absorb everything and think, well, he is famous. He does have a lot of money, so he must know things.
Yeah, they see themselves as virtuous. They see themselves as heroes. And it's the same thing was true in the Harlem Renaissance, dating back to, you know, the turn of the 20th century. A lot of the black artists were individuals who were the children of upper middle class black, what we call the black bourgeoisie or the Negro bourgeoisie. And so these are basically kids who were born to black parents with a lot of money, but to the extent that they, you know, wrote poetry and wrote books and wrote songs, it was always from the optic of the black underclass, the black poor, and so on. And so they saw themselves as kind of like, let me be the mouthpiece for the oppressed of my people kind of thing. And so I think that, like, when with LeBron James or D.L. Hughley or even Steve Harvey and some of these other black entertainers, even though they themselves have money, they see themselves as a mouthpiece for what they genuinely believe to be the oppressed underclass. But when you go, it's very interesting and peculiar that they don't live amongst this black underclass.
Right.
And so even they are afraid to live in South Side of Chicago or, you know, in Baltimore or any of these other communities. Even they are afraid to live amongst these people because they know they don't want to get robbed. They don't want to experience drive-bys and things of that nature. And so all that is to say that because of the criminal behavior that goes on in some of these communities, the blacks in those communities really bring it on themselves, if I'm being completely honest with you.
Well, I agree with what you're saying there, because not only you use Steve Harvey and D.L. Hughley, you know, they don't want to live in those areas, not to mention they work their asses off so they don't have to live in those areas. They've earned that right. They worked hard. I mean, Steve Harvey is a fellow Ohioan here. They worked hard. But rather than lead by example and say, hey, look what I did. I worked really hard. I got out of the bad area. If you apply yourself, if you stay disciplined and stay focused, you can do it too. But instead, they seem to spend their time saying, yeah, you have no shot because the system's against you.
Well, they're staying within the Overton window, and they realize to step outside of that window is to be canceled. And so even though, like, you know, someone like a Denzel Washington, who is relatively conservative, and to the extent that there is something major that goes on, he tends to stay out of it. And I think that's kind of also a tactic that, you know, that he uses to not get canceled, but that's neither here nor there. But the difference between him and D.L. Hughley is D.L. Hughley is, you know, very ready and willing to say the things within that window. Because he knows that he agrees with it wholeheartedly. And I think to the extent that celebrities, black celebrities, don't comment on it at all, is they know that there's a world that exists outside that window, but they just would rather not comment on it because they just don't want to get canceled or lose contracts or what have you.
Now, one of the men in the movie, Uncle Tom, the first one, said, and I quote, "When you are angry, it's very easy to be deceived." And there is that need for objectivity, as you say you have and clearly live by. Now, my question to you is, how would someone, white or black, young or old, anyone, get to that point? How do you tell someone, hey, put your anger aside for a minute and your knee-jerk emotions aside for 1 second and be objective? How did you do it? Was there a tipping point? Was there one thing? Was it over time? But how would you tell someone to get to that point where you can put your anger aside and your emotions and listen to some facts and be objective?
I think that, you know, I believe in God, and I think that the Bible teaches us a lot about ourselves. And one of the things that it teaches us about ourselves is that, you know, emotions are there for a reason. You know, I mean, there's a reason. Like, anger is a good emotion to have. Sympathy is a good emotion to have. I think that they can be exploited, but they're survival traits that we have as human beings. And so I think that, like, for me, there's several people in my life who I'm constantly talking to about these things. And they might be kind of on the hard left, but I try to appeal to certain things that we have some kind of common agreement on, some kind of common stance on. And I try to use that to try to expand and show them, hey, all those things that make you angry, like this leftist ideology and the peddlers of that leftist ideology are doing those same things that make you angry. So let's talk about that objective way. And so I try to talk about the things that they agree with, and then from there, really kind of expand and to show them, you know, It's kind of like the man behind the curtain type situation in The Wizard of Oz, like to really show you, like, hey, this is what's really going on. And for some, it takes a lot to make that leap, but you just got to work with them and just break it down logically.
Now, we all get down on ourselves. People get discouraged, get depressed. Sometimes you even throw a good old-fashioned pity party. You said, if you keep yourself in a state of woe is me, then you will never accomplish anything. You mentioned in the movie that not your parents, but the media, other relatives and associates were programmed to live in a, quote, constant state of distress. You would think that would just become exhausting. Was it exhausting for you? Were you tired of just being tired?
Yeah, I think that is very common in a lot of Black households to be introduced from a very early age to very explicit film and books that really talk about the past end of America, how racist America is, and how it persists to this very day. And a lot of Blacks from a very young age are trained and indoctrinated to be bitter about white America, to look with disdain, to feel other than. This is why I never use the term African American. That's a word that I reject very, very harshly, because it's a term that is made to make Black people feel as though we're not really American. We're really something other than American. And ironically, it was coined by Jesse Jackson, who himself is Black. But
I did not know he coined that term. I did not know that.
Yeah. But it is a very stressful state to be in. This is something that might get me in trouble, but I think it's the reason why a lot of Blacks die earlier than other ethnic groups, just because of that paranoia. Yeah, that stress. It's not good for you. It's just not healthy.
Oh, I don't think there's a problem with what you said there. I mean, I'll just use myself as an example. I get 3 consecutive nights of lousy sleep. I'm kind of angry about everything. And that's just on a very simple level. I mean, you know this. I mean, the average person, you don't get enough sleep too many days in a row, your temper is shorter. You can't focus as much. You can't concentrate. You're not exactly willing to listen to new ideologies, that's for sure. I don't even know what my name is if I don't get enough sleep. So, you know, on a larger scale, start programming me at a young age to hate an entire race, and you get pounded that into your brain every day from whether it's friends, family, media, politicians, or whatever, it weighs on you. And yet that mainstream media and those very politicians are the ones telling them, hey, it's the other people's fault. It's like, no, you're creating the problem and then saying, hey, we're here to help you fix that problem that we caused.
Yeah, it's conflict theory. It's that comes out of the Frankfurt School, which is a very communist strategy. But yeah, it's a very real thing, and I think it's something that we see being played out. Like, I'm always hearing from white friends of mine, because I live in Cedar Hill, which is a town in Texas outside of Dallas. It's predominantly Black, upper middle class Black community, but you know, there's a lot of white people that live there too. And even they say sometimes when they go to like the grocery store or something, they're not treated very kindly by, you know, the Black girl at the checkout counter or what have you, where they just saw this older Black lady who was checking out in front of them, which was greeted with, hi, Mrs. So-and-so. And it was just so pleasant. And then once it got to their turn, they're just, you know, not treated the same. And the reality is that a lot of Blacks are being trained to believe that white people hate them. And so as a defense mechanism, they are going to treat whites with, you know, bitterness, so as to let you know that I'm the, you know, you got the wrong Black person if you think that you're going to, you know, assert your white privilege today. You know what I mean? And that's, it's kind of like an attitude that a lot of Black people have as a result of what's being pushed through the media and through this narrative.
All right, so one final question, Mr. Jackson. I really do appreciate you taking the time here. What would you say to a young male or female, regardless of race, who fall in that very impressionable age range, say 13 to mid-20s, that are growing up in this woke culture that emphasizes victimhood and victim culture, who are listening to this podcast? What would you say to them?
I would say to them that they need to ask their parents to get them out of the public school and to try to find some other alternatives. Maybe even go online and try to find some homeschool curriculums. It doesn't have to be super religious or anything, but just something that really trains you to think and look at the world objectively, how to be a persuasive orator, how to be able to dissect things and think of things critically, really, you know, because I think that a lot of our public schools are laying young minds to waste purposefully. Mm. And I think that, you know, kids who are interested in not being yet another number amongst their peers need to, you know, try to pursue other alternatives to what's available now in our education system. But also be skeptical of what you see and hear in the media. It's very clear that they have an agenda and just don't fall for it.
No, that's very well put. And wow, this has been as good as I have been anticipating talking to you, sir. So you are you've sold your plumbing business. Do I have that right?
Not entirely. I sold. So I had a partnership with a guy. We did plumbing and electrical. Mm-hmm. And so I sold my portion of that company.
I see.
However, I'm still doing, I still have a plumbing company. It's just very small. I'm just serving the small number of customers that I've already gathered over the years. And my main focus is Uncle Tom and really trying to put this film together among other projects.
And I don't suppose you can give us a release date yet? We're not there yet?
Not yet. We're looking at fall of this year. We're not sure the day and month yet, but we're working on it, and it's going to be something special for sure.
Well, I would absolutely recommend the first one. I've seen it twice, and I want to thank you again, Mr. Jackson, for coming on the show. This has been a real treat. This is a first of its kind for this podcast, and again, I really thank you for your time, and I wish you the best, sir.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
I hope you've enjoyed this special edition of Amateur Nation. We return next week with plenty of snark, common sense, and logic. Three Amateur Nation topics, off-topic topics, and three pro things. If you have comments regarding this episode, email me, lou@loucantini.com. And you can download my book from Amazon, subscribe to my YouTube page to see podcast episode previews, and hear the show on 16 podcast platforms. Amateur Nation is not just a podcast, it's a movement. Remember, amateurs, we see you. You're not at home. Don't do life wrong. Go pro. Don't be an amateur. For Amateur Nation, I'm Lou Santini, and this has been a Big Major production.